From the Berkshires to the Sound, from wherever you live in MLB America, this is Inside the Parker. You give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the scoop on Major League Baseball. Now here's Baseball Hall of Fame voter number 103, Rob Parker.
Welcome to Inside the Parker. We got a great show for you today. Coming up, we're going to talk with former Twins outfielder Jock Jones. He stops by, tells us about what he's doing post-baseball. It'll be an interesting listen. Plus, we'll do Foul or Fair with J.R. Gamble. J.R., of course, from theshadowleague.com. We've got that and much more. I'm Rob Parker, your host. I'm here, you there. Let's go.
Batter up.
To lead off, it's getting robbed.
And keep him up.
Rob's hot take on the three biggest stories in Major League Baseball. Number one.
Don't look now, but Ronald Acuna Jr. is headed for stardom. I know people know about him, and he's been a really good player. But this year, more so than ever, it's hard not to look at this guy and think that he could be like a Mike Trout kind of person with the numbers he's putting up. Acuna this past week became just the second youngest player in baseball history behind, yes, Mike Trout, to hit 30 home runs and steal 30 bases in the same season. That's right. And Acuna, with about 5 weeks left to the baseball season, has 36 homers, 30 steals. This was as of Tuesday. And he could become, you ready for this? The fifth player in baseball history to join the 40-40 club. It's possible. It's reachable. You know what's even more scary? That he'll be 22 in December. This guy's tearing up Major League Baseball. People in the Braves organization know that they got a bona fide star. They have a guy who could be the anchor of their team for the next 10, 15 years. That's why the name Mike Trout comes up. One thing that's never been done in baseball is the 50-50 club. 50 home runs, 50 steals, especially since guys don't steal bases like they used to. But is it impossible? Is the sky not the limit? This guy was the 2018 National League Rookie of the Year for good reason. And there's no sophomore jinx, sophomore slump with Acuna. He has been lethal. That's why the Braves are in position to win the NL East. The Braves are a really good team, and Ronald Acuna is a star. Bigger than just a rookie of the year, he's a star in baseball and could be the next 40-40 man. And you know what? That would be amazing.
Number two.
Yes, it lived up to the hype. The Yankees coming to Dodger Stadium the past weekend, and people talked about it as it was a preview, potential preview of the World Series. Two storied franchises meeting in L.A. The Yankees don't come west and don't come to L.A. often. And yes, the crowd, it felt like it was more than just a regular season game. It felt like a playoff game on the three nights that they had baseball, and it was amazing. And you know what? Not only did being in the ballpark feel like this was something special, it also played well on television. Sunday night's game, the Yankees and Dodgers on Sunday Night Baseball, delivered a 1.9 metered market rating on ESPN, matching the Yankees-Red Sox on July 28th as the highest-rated Sunday Night Baseball of the year. That's according to Nielsen. And not only that, Sunday night's telecast was up 58% from last year's comparable game. And you know what? It's a dream matchup for Major League Baseball. I know Astros fans don't want to hear it. They want a rematch with the Dodgers, the Astros-Dodgers from a couple years ago. But boy, would this be something for Major League Baseball if it's the Yankees and Dodgers, two biggest cities, two-story franchises, home run hitters, up and down each lineup, star-studded. It would be amazing, and I think baseball would flourish, and all eyes would be on the Fall Classic if we rewound the clock and, you know what, went back to the two teams that have faced each other the most in World Series history, the Yankees and the Dodgers.
Number three.
Here we go. Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole are the two most dominant pitchers in the American League, and so it only makes sense that these two guys are battling for the AL Cy Young, two teammates. And most people think that one of those two guys could wind up being the Cy Young for the American League. Right now, coming into Tuesday, Verlander led the league with 239 strikeouts. Cole had just one fewer, and Cole leads the AL with a 2.75 ERA. Verlander's ERA, 2.77. That's why a lot of people think that the Astros have a great chance to win a World Series because they have these two guys at the top of their rotation. They also went out and made the big trade to get Zach Greinke to be their third man. Imagine going into a series with those three guys at the top of the rotation. The only bad part is I still have a hard time with Verlander basically having a reporter banned from the press box, from the post-game meeting with him because he didn't like the guy from the Detroit Free Press. Verlander's too good. He's a potential Hall of Famer to be worried about reporters and doing stuff like that. The Astros were wrong for banning the reporter and not letting him talk to Verlander. And Verlander was wrong. Both of them were wrong. And the one part that I just still look at is I think the reporters, his fellow scribes were wrong to take part in any press conference that Verlander was doing, especially when they all knew that the reporter from the Detroit Free Press was banned from taking part in a press conference. It sets a bad precedent. I know personally I would have never taken part of that press conference if another reporter had been banned. You know why? It could have been me.
Here comes the big interview. Listen and learn.
Oh, it's so good.
All right, let's welcome in former Major League outfielder Jock Jones, who came up with the Minnesota Twins in 1999, and he joins us on the Inside the Parker podcast. What's happening, Jock?
Rob, how are you, man?
Man, doing great. So I'm going to tell everybody, you know, people know that I'm an adjunct professor at USC. So I'm walking to campus on Monday, which was the first day of school. And who do I see with his backpack on his back? It's Mr. Jones himself. Man, what's going on? You go to USC? I know you played there, baseball. But are you,
man.
What's going on?
So I came back to finish up. I had a year and a half left to finish, and I actually saw you on campus last year, but I didn't stop you, and I was kicking myself for not stopping you, but I saw you again, and I said, man, I'm going to stop this guy this time, and so I've been going to school for the last year, and my last semester, which is the fall semester of 19, my last semester, and I'll graduate.
Man, and what are you majoring in? What's your concentration?
Sociology. Was the study of people, and like it's always been on my heart, and I was very active in the RBI program and the Buses for Baseball program with Major League Baseball, and just to go back to my neighborhood that I grew up in and mentor the kids that have come behind me.
Man, that's an awesome thing. And was it hard to go back to school? I mean, you're not a spring chicken now, 44 years old, to get back in the classroom with the kids and just say, I'm going to finish this and make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what to expect, but I know. I mean, I have kids myself. I have a 21-year-old. He's a senior at the University of Alabama. He's a criminal justice major. I've got a 13-year-old daughter, so I have a pulse on how kids are and how they act and how they interact, and I feel like I'm still a kid at heart. So I didn't feel like it was going to be that big of a deal, but the first 3 weeks were kind of tough because the educational part of my brain was turned off because all I knew were numbers and what pitchers were trying to do and how they were trying to get me out and how, you know, as a coach, how to try to get the other, you know, get ahead of the other pitchers and the hitters and all that stuff. And so after about 3 weeks, everything seemed to settle in and it was back to normal. It's been pretty fun and easy.
Man, pretty amazing. Back in 1996, you played on the United States Olympic team, got a bronze medal. We see in the NBA now, like a lot of NBA players who aren't really maybe interested in playing for those international kind of things. What was your experience like? And you think as we move forward and guys keep making bigger and bigger money, maybe, you know, playing in events like the Olympics won't be as appealing?
For me, it was great because we can hold on to the fact that we were the last college team to participate in the Olympics. We had a good showing. Looking back on it, though, it was, I don't know if it was, it was more of an experience thing for us to gain experience, but it was a disservice because we're playing against grown, mature men, especially on the Cuban side. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I think what kind of deterred people from maybe wanting to participate now is the freak thing that happened to Paul George. You know what I mean? Michael Jordan and those guys were the first really dream team to go out there and participate and win gold medals, and then people, professional athletes fell in love with that. But I think after this Paul George thing and the way the contracts are and how much money these guys are making, I think they're having second thoughts about participating in this kind of thing.
No doubt about it. You broke in, I said earlier, with the Twins in 1999. You wound up hitting 165 career home runs, .277 batting average. How many home runs would you hit in this baseball era with the tight baseball, with guys swinging for the fences, strikeouts don't matter? How many home runs would you hit a season?
My career average would probably be .230, but I'd probably have a 100 or more home runs with the way these guys are going. I mean, it just seems like everyone's trying to lift the ball out of the ballpark. And it's funny and interesting at the same time because I heard King Griffey Jr. on the telecast last night say, you know, the guy's asking about home runs. He said, man, I just try to hit the ball hard on the line, and I miss hit like 40 every year, and they went over the fence. He goes, but I try to hit the ball hard on the line, which is how I taught hitting when I was with the Nationals and which was my approach to hitting, which should be what the approach to hitting is now.
I'm glad you brought up Ken Griffey Jr. LeBron James said that, and you were a left-handed hitter, LeBron James said that Ken Griffey Jr. had the sweetest swing in the history of baseball. I believe the best swing does come from a left-hander, but do you agree it's Ken Griffey Jr. swinging from the left side?
I love Junior, and he had a sweet swing, but I think the sweetest swing is, it's probably a toss-up between Ted Williams and Barry Bonds. I mean, Barry Bonds' swing was so short and direct to the ball, and he didn't try to lift it, and his homers were on the line.
Right.
And if he mishit it a little bit and got under it, it went even further. But his homer, he hit the ball so hard, man, on the line. And it left the park like yesterday.
No, I'm with you. I do have, if I were to throw in one as a secondary guy or close to it, I would say Daryl Strawberry's left-handed swing with that looping home run swing. What do you think about Strawberry's?
It was short, too. It was short and powerful. I mean, he was already strong enough, so he didn't try to do too much. He just tried to hit the ball hard, and it's just a short, quick, compact swing.
No doubt about it. So tell me about your major league career. You played in Minnesota, like I said, Chicago with the Cubs, Detroit, and the Marlins. What sticks out to you in your mind, your baseball career? What was your moment when you were like, man, that was pretty awesome?
Just looking back on it, how we were in Minnesota, we were a family, we were brothers. We were 25 brothers. We didn't all get along, but we could fight amongst each other, but the other team, we protected our own. You understand what I'm saying?
No, absolutely.
The further we get away from all that, like my friends are still Torrey Hunter, LaTroy Hawkins, Matt Lawton, and Eddie Guardado. Us five, we're still close-knit. We do family things together. Our kids are growing up. Our kids still interact. But you just don't find that, man. You don't find that family atmosphere and have good athletes and good baseball players all at the same time. Like, we had that in Minnesota, and it was awesome. And we're all still in contact.
All right. His name is Jock Jones, man. Sweet left-handed swing. former major league outfielder. Hey, Jock, we appreciate your time, man. The best of luck, the school, and congratulations, man, at USC.
Thanks, yep. Rob.
It's time for the Pocket Protector Centro, the analytic numbers you need to know. Well, maybe.
FS1's Anthony Masterson is his name. BS Analytics is his game. What you got for us, Anthony?
All right, Rob, last week we talked about pitch framing, so for this week, let's stay behind the plate and talk about pop time. Now, pop time isn't necessarily a newfangled metric, but all the new technology surrounding the game gives us more of an opportunity to appreciate what a catcher can do. Frankly put, pop time measures the time from the moment the pitch hits the catcher's mitt to the moment the ball hits the projected fielder's mitt, say, on a stolen base attempt. It's a combo of how quickly the catcher releases the ball and the velocity the catcher fires the baseball. Now, we can use all these metrics together to find the backstops that do the best at controlling the running game based on sheer physical talent and quickness. Now, the average big league pop time on a steal attempt of second is just over 2 seconds. This year, Phillies all-star catcher JT Realmuto leads all of baseball with an average pop time to second base of 1.88 seconds. Now, the quickest hands in the game, they belong to the White Sox' Wellington Castillo, with an average exchange from glove to hand of 0.63 seconds, while one of the top catching prospects in the entire game of baseball, the Padres' Francisco Mejia, has the strongest arm of any catcher in the game. The 24-year-old has been clocked at 89 miles per hour this season on third of second. Rob, they are no longer the tools of ignorance.
All right, Anthony, good stuff. We might, just might be able to use that.
And what that ball is.
It was a big week in the big leagues.
Who's up? Who's up?
I don't believe it! My, oh my!
Is it foul or is it fair? And now, here's ShadowLeague.com MLB insider, J.R. Gamble.
NBA superstar LeBron James. We know he has an affinity for the Yankees, but he says the greatest swing in the history of baseball belongs to Junior. That's Ken Griffey Jr. J.R., is that foul or is that fair?
That's fair.
It's a fair ball.
I mean, Bron might not be a baseball guy, but he was just about dead on with this one. Griffey certainly has a top five all-time swing, you know, as far as beauty and effortlessness goes. But he does have some competition in my book. George Brett's swing was like picture perfect. You know, Will Clark had a pretty swing. Every swing he took, it was like he was taking a picture. You know, Tony Gwynn was like fundamentally omnipotent with his swing. Rod Carew was mechanical and pinpoint accurate. And let's not forget Daryl Strawberry. He has a top 10 swing all time. He came through the zone like an extended laser. But no one will really put up an argument against the kid for best swing ever. It's an easy thing to put out there and not have anybody question your baseball gangster. So good move by Bron.
JR, the one thing I will agree, and I think any baseball fan would agree, the left-handed swing is the prettier swing.
Fasten your seatbelt.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Here comes Parker's top three MLB teams this week. Number three.
The Houston Astros coming into Tuesday, a record of 85 and 74. Yes, we know they're loaded. They have unbelievable pitching. Two of their stars, Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole, are neck and neck for the Cy Young Award winning the American League. They're number one and two in strikeouts, which is incredible. And Verlander as well has won the award once. He's finished second three times. And here he is, long in the tooth in his career, but in the mix. But the Astros still, as good as they are, I have them as the third best team in baseball.
Number two.
The Los Angeles Dodgers coming into Tuesday, a record of 86 and 46. Incredible. 40 games over 500. And yes, but this past weekend, they had a chance to really solidify that they were that team. And instead, they lost 2 of 3 to the Bronx Bombers in L.A. And even to get one game that they won, they didn't hit in this series. They were able to escape with a 2-1 win for their only game in that series. The Yankees really dominated and hit better than the Dodgers. So I have them as the second best team in baseball.
Number one.
The New York freaking Yankees. And here's the reason to be afraid of them. Aaron Judge has his home run bat again. The Yankees entered Tuesday 85-47. They've had nothing but injuries. We've chronicled that. But Aaron Judge hit a home run in each of the three games in Los Angeles. Some were just monster shots. One on Sunday to right field was just a laser. The center fielder to right center. Center fielder didn't even move. And this is just telling you about how powerful the Yankees are. Love their bullpen, yes. Starting rotation is iffy. But if they can get five innings out of their starters, they will be in place to have a chance to win a World Series. So right now, as I've been saying most of the season, the New York freaking Yankees are the best team in baseball.
Take out the paper, then the trash.
It's time for Trash Talk Twitter. Your chance to trash anyone or anything in Major League Baseball.
This week's winner is at Kanan Cadwell. He's an Astros fan, and he ain't happy. He sent this tweet. Wow, the Yankees are guaranteeing a World Series between them and L.A.? The disrespect to the Astros. Can't wait till the postseason. End quote. If you want a chance to win a new era snapback, just like Kanan, send your trash to at Rob Parker FS1 on Twitter.
When Rob was a newspaper columnist, he lived by this motto. If I'm writing, I'm ripping. Let's bring in a writer or broadcaster, old or new.
All right, let's welcome into the podcast my former radio partner and, of course, KMBR radio host in San Francisco. His name is Mark Willard. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
It's good to be with you, man. I'm set to challenge you now to be America's biggest baseball honk.
You know it. All right, let's do it.
How you doing? Everything good?
Everything is great, and I want to talk to you about both the Giants and the A's. The Giants are currently, as of Tuesday, 4.5 games out of the wild card. Mark, was it a smart decision to hold on to players and not trade them away and make a push for the playoffs in Bruce Bochy's last season?
Yeah, it was in this respect. I don't think they were holding on and going for it as much as people think. I think the reason Madison Bumgarner is still a Giant is because they didn't like the offers. I don't think it was because they dug their heels in and decided we're going for it. If you look at the other moves they made, in fact, they did make moves that were established veterans for younger players. In other words, moves looking to the future. They gave up Sam Dyson and Drew Pomeranz and Mark Melanson out of their bullpen and got young guys. In fact, the guy they got for Pomeranz from the Brewers, their number three prospect, Mauricio Dubon, is joining the Giants tonight and has been called up. The only, for now, acquisition they made was Scooter Gennett, which didn't cost them anything, and they just announced that they're releasing him as of today. So they did have an eye on the future, but I think that it ended up making sense based on the lack of large offers the rental-type players were getting. And so I just don't think they liked the offers for Will Smith or Madison Bumgarner, and it kind of worked because they were winning some of the games at that point. The fan base really wanted him to hold on to those guys anyway, so I think that's why they did.
Speaking of the fan base, we know how great baseball fans there are in the Bay Area, especially the Giants. I mean, for years, packed them in, of course, won three World Series in a short period of time in 6 years. How tough is it to see the stands not filled and people, you know, taking a break and figuring that they're going to reload and they'll be back?
Yeah, I think everyone's gotten used to it because it's been a little bit of a steady decline for the last 3 years. And actually, they had a pretty good summer because right when the kids got out of school, the Giants started winning, and the ballpark was, while not sold out, I mean, it was north of 30,000 almost every night. And so that's certainly acceptable with everybody going back to school in the last week or so. They had a game last night against the Diamondbacks that was a pretty pretty quiet and small crowd by their standards. I think they announced 29,000, but it's something that you know, it was a little jarring a couple of years ago, but it's understandable at this point. It's a lot of the same players who are in decline. They've also had some PR issues with what happened with Larry Bear being suspended
Absolutely.
Earlier this year, right? And so that factors into all this, but it's still a team that is very much involved with the heartbeat of the city, and you know, as soon as they start winning a few more ball games, I think it corrects itself pretty quickly.
Let's switch to the other team in the Bay, the Oakland A's, and they're going to make the playoffs again. It looks like it. They have a good team. They're always around the mix. They don't spend a lot of money. They don't have the biggest stars. They have some, you know, really good players, Chris Davis. But this is the other thing. At some point, doesn't Billy Beane need to be able to win more than just make the playoffs before you can really say that this guy is worth all the accolades and all the talk and everybody else following his rule? It's one thing to compete, but not to be able to advance and win in the playoffs. Do they have to do that at some point?
I don't know. I mean, first off, there isn't a fan base drumbeat for anything, right? The fan base doesn't demand anything because it's just not that huge of a fan base.
Right.
And when you also look at the resources he's given, making the playoffs with some consistency is actually amazing. And the fact that, you know, they haven't been able to go deep into the playoffs, you know, it's kind of acceptable because every single year they find diamonds in the rough. They've got good young players. When they get really good, they let them go and then rinse, repeat. They do it again. So every year they're good, yet it seems like every year it's a surprise again when they are. And so when it's a surprise when they're good, there's just not that much pressure to do much when you get there. And so same thing this year. The Astros are the big dog in the division, and they'll win it. And if the A's can somehow grind out a wild card and then maybe do something with it if they get there, you know, I think, you know, whatever fans they have will be satisfied.
And just speaking of fans, that's the other part. When they get this new ballpark, do you think that'll change things? Because as much as people, like, you know, look at the A's and think of them as the stepchild or whatever, that's a proud franchise that had some really great players and great teams at one point in Oakland. You think the ballpark will make that big of a difference, Mark?
Well, the interesting thing you said there is when they get the ballpark, and I would tell you that just about anybody in the Bay Area would say it's rather presumptuous to assume that what they are proposing is actually going to happen. And you know this, stadiums, especially in the state of California, are incredibly, incredibly tricky, difficult. The city of Oakland, we don't need to tell you what's going on stadium-wise there. The Raiders are going to Vegas, and the Warriors have moved to San Francisco. It is really tricky. And again, it's a team that does not have behind it a big, loud fan base that's demanding things. So I would more say if that happens, then in a short sample, would it help? Absolutely. But you know this, Rob. It's just like the Chargers landing in L.A. when they went through a stadium thing, and it's not being that successful out of the gate because there just isn't that love from the fan base. And here in the Bay Area, the love is reserved mostly for the Giants. So I don't know if anything long-term or short-term is going to be considered wildly successful in terms of numbers.
All right, his name, Mark Willard from KNBR, one of the best talk show hosts in the Bay Area. We appreciate the knowledge, Mark. Thank you.
My dude, anytime.
Now bring in the closer.
Strike one.
Strike two.
Strike three.
He's out. Here's why MLB is better than the NFL or NBA, and it isn't even close.
This is why baseball is better than the NFL and NBA, especially when you talk about the NFL. You just can play the game longer. We just saw this. We saw a 29-year-old quarterback in Andrew Luck have to call it quits because he can't do it anymore. Can I run off the names and numbers of people who played Major League Baseball for 20 years? Derek Jeter played 20 years all in the Bronx. We know Cal Ripken Jr. We can go Dave Winfield. I could go on and on and on. You can play baseball for a long time We're looking at LeBron James coming into year 17. Most of the guys in his draft class are long gone or not playing anymore. It's hard. You can play baseball for a long time as a player. Imagine logging 20 years, making all that guaranteed cheese. You want to talk about bonding with the player? Not fearful that he's going to disappear after a cup of coffee and a sweet roll in the NFL? Doesn't happen. You buy a jersey, you're probably going to be pretty good. I know there's movement, but that player is going to be around for a long time. Baseball has longevity. That's why people were like, Kyler Murray, are you sure you want to play in the National Football League? I get it. You're a quarterback. You're going straight to the pros. There's no minor leagues. There's no buses. You're going to be a household name overnight. How long will you play in the NFL? Major League Baseball is the king when it comes to making money and having an extended career. That's why baseball is better than the NFL and the NBA. In the words of New York TV legend, the late Bill Jorgensen, thanking you for your time this time until next time. Rob Parker, out.
He can't get it. This could be an inside to Parker.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.